Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 411, titled The Bayer Facts, I.G. Farben and the Politics of Murder. This is being recorded on May 25th of the year 2003. The title refers to the Bayer Company, B-A-Y-E-R, the famous pharmaceutical company that was the maker of aspirin. It also was one of the principal component companies of the pivotal I.G. Farben firm, one of the principal chemical and pharmaceutical companies in the world, arguably the most important heavy industrial concern in the world, or corporate industrial concern in the world would be a better way of putting it. It also was the backbone of not only the Third Reich and its military production, but also was the central element in the remarkable and deadly Bormann organization, the economic component of a Third Reich gone underground, and the member companies of the former IG Farben and its related firms are pivotal elements in the contemporary history of the world. We're going to be taking a look at IG Farben through the years, and in particular some of the death-dealing projects that it's been involved in over the years. Before we get to the subject material itself, let me remind you that sister station WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming at wfmu.org/Dave Emery, one word, DaveEmory. Older programs are available for download only on a longer URL that's linked both to the wfmu.org/Dave Emery website and to the Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. There will be a detailed article length annotated description of For the Record program number 411 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website within a week or so of the airing of this broadcast. Generally, they are available within 2 weeks of the broadcast, usually within 1 week. Now, we're going to begin by taking a look at, again, IG Farben, a firm that I've spoken about many times before, a firm that's cropped up in connection with a number of things that we've done in connection with September 11th. Recall that in For the Record programs number 4, and For the Record program number 408, we took a look at the fact that Mohammed Atta, at least according to investigative journalist Daniel Hopsicker, was sponsored in his sojourns in Germany and perhaps the United States by the Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft and its American component, the Karl Duisberg Society. Karl Duisberg was one of the founders of IG Farben and the head of the Bayer Company. We've also looked at the Degussa firm that was part of the IG Farben complex. It manufactured the Zyklon B poison gas for the gas chambers in World War II, and its nuclear subsidiary was responsible for the Third Reich's atomic bomb production, and one of the people that was involved with that, Dr. Gernot Zippe, who developed the gas centrifuge essential for the making of nuclear weapons, in turn had a protege, Karl-Heinz Schaub, who sold software for the mass production of nuclear weapons to Iraq and Saddam Hussein, and who also got gas centrifuge technology to Saddam Hussein. The head of the Degussa Heavy Metals Division in the post-World War II period was former SS scientific officer Dr. Alfred Beecher, who also became a nuclear export expert for the former West German government. Now, by way of kicking off the substantive material in this program, we're going to take a look at one of the definitive books about IG Farben. This was authored by Joseph Borken, who was part of the same team that was headed up, the team that was headed up by James Stuart Martin in World War II. He was part of the economic warfare section of the Antitrust Division of the Department of Justice and worked under James Stuart Martin during World War II. The book is called The Crime and Punishment of I.G. Farben, subtitled The Startling Account of the Unholy Alliance of Adolf Hitler and Germany's Great Chemical Combine, published in hardcover by the Free Press, copyright 1979, and the ISBN number is 002-904-6300. Actually, it's copyright 1978 by the Free Press, a division of Macmillan. Between a discussion of the Hoechst Chemical Company, or the Hoechst Pharmaceutical Company that we'll be talking about, and before a discussion of the BASF Chemical Company that we'll also be talking about, both major components of IG Farben before, during, and after World War II, Joseph Borkin discusses the Bayer Pharmaceutical Company and some of its contributions. Bayer's pharmaceutical venture was even larger than that of Hoechst. Out of its laboratories emerged aspirin, the world's most famous home remedy for pain and fever. Bayer was also responsible for the introduction of heroin, which it sold as a cure for morphine addiction and as a cough suppressant especially effective in children. Later, the Bayer laboratories developed methadone in preparation for World War II as a synthetic substitute for morphine. It was originally named Dolefine in honor of Adolf Hitler. Today, methadone is used principally in the treatment of heroin addiction. So an interesting bit of corporate lineage with regard to illegal drug abuse and the ongoing issue of addiction. Now, we're going to jump ahead in time from the pre-World War II period to the contemporary period, and we're going to take a look at an article that was researched for us by a member of the listening audience. This article is from the New York Times of Friday, September 14th of 2001. The article is datelined London, September 13th. This, of course, was 2 days after the September 11th attacks, and this was 5 days before the first of the anthrax letters was mailed in the as yet unsolved anthrax attacks that were part of the chain of events surrounding September 11th. Recall that the anthrax letters were sent to the members of the news media and the Democratic Party. This article is by Suzanne Kapner, K-A-P-N-E-R, again, dated London, September 13th, 2 days after September 11th, 5 days before the anthrax letters were mailed. It's headlined, Bayer won't sell drug unit and picks insider as chief. It reads in part, defying expectations, Bayer AG said today that it would not sell its embattled pharmaceuticals unit after all, and it named a longtime executive, not a fresh face from outside the company, to succeed its chief executive, Manfred Schneider. Though it had made clear that it was not happy about the idea, Bayer seemed to be heeding increased pressure to get out of the drug business. Last month, it was forced to withdraw a cholesterol-lowering drug, Baycol, that had been linked to 52 deaths and is the subject of a class-action lawsuit in the United States. Baycol was critical to the drug unit's revenue and profit growth, analysts said, and its withdrawal made plain that Bayer was no longer big enough in the drug business to thrive independently. Analysts and investors had also hoped that a fresh face in the chief executive's office after Mr. Schneider retires in April might make a break with corporate strategy. But Bayer chose Werner Wenning, W-E-N-N-I-N-G, 54, a 30-year veteran of the company who is now its chief financial officer. Mr. Schneider said today that an outright sale of the drug unit had been ruled out. Quote, despite the major setback, he said, again quoting, these activities remain a core business of the Bayer Group that can contribute substantially to enhancing the company's value. Unquote. Now, 5 days after this article is datelined, the anthrax attacks took place in the United States. The main producer of Cipro, the anthrax drug, is the Bayer Company. And the effect of the anthrax attacks was to multiply the value of Bayer's stock. That was from the New York Times of September 14th of 2001. We're now going to review an article that we looked at in For the Record program number 335. And this is from the LA Times of October 18th. Of 2001, 1 month and 5 days later, and exactly 1 month after the anthrax attacks took place. On the front page of the business section, we have this article by Charles Piller headlined, Biotechnology Stocks Are Gaining on Anthrax Scare, subtitled, Pharmaceuticals. Analysts caution investors against betting that the crisis will buoy such firms indefinitely. Skipping down, Bayer, the German maker of Cipro, the antibiotic of choice for anthrax infections, is tripling its output of the drug. And Bayer's stock price has risen by more than 33% since the anthrax outbreaks began. So it's very interesting that Bayer did make a decision not to sell its pharmaceuticals unit after the Baycol disaster, and then a few days later, an event took place as yet unsolved that was to increase the price of Bayer's stock by 33%. 5%. Now, in light of the fact that Bayer, although the company has done a great, its products are essential, and you will find them stocked in every hospital. It also is a company that has its history inextricably linked with the history of mass murder. It is linked to the Third Reich and to the Underground Reich and to the Bormann Organization, a private foundation named for the head of IG Farben. The Karl Duisberg Gesellschaft was alleged by Daniel Hopsicker to have been the vehicle for sponsoring Mohammed Atta's ventures abroad in Germany and the United States. One wonders about the sudden decision by Bayer not to sell its pharmaceuticals unit, the anthrax attacks, which took place a few days later, which made that unit very much more profitable. I would also note that, as we're going to see later on in the program, what insiders have called, or what business observers have called, Germany Incorporated, the tremendously incestuous nature of German big business and big finance, was evident in that particular decision in which an insider was picked to manage the Bayer company. We're going to take a look at two of the developments that have taken place vis-a-vis the corporations that I've looked at in the long series about German corporate control over the American media, and when in the summer of 2002 the heads of Bertelsmann and Vivendi were replaced, when Thomas Middelhoff, the head of Bertelsmann, and Jean-Marie Messier, the head of Vivendi, were replaced. They were replaced with people who had a long history of management with the major companies of what was IG Farben, namely the BASF chemical company and Hoechst Pharmaceuticals. So we'll take a look at that later. Now, in connection with Bayer and the politics of mass murder, we're going to take a look at another element that has featured prominently in past For the Record programs and in RFA number 16, namely AIDS. We've done a number of different programs, including numerous interviews with guests such as Dr. Leonard Horowitz, talking about AIDS as a biological warfare weapon and the probability that is, in fact, the origin of AIDS. In For the Record programs 16, among others, we took a look at Dr. Eric Traub, the head of bacteriological and virological warfare for Nazi Germany in World War II, and the fact that Eric Traub and his top assistant, Dr. Anna Burger, were brought to the United States and were put to work under the auspices of Project Paperclip. The Merck Pharmaceuticals firm, which has an American branch and a German affiliate, was heavily involved in the manufacturing of the experimental hepatitis B vaccine program. And Dr. Wolf Schmunes, in charge of that vaccine program, also had an interesting history. He was a slave laborer at the IG Farben camps around Auschwitz and appears to have been an employee of the Underground Reich. Also, at one point, a roommate and friend of a young Polish priest named Karol Wojtyla, now and better known as Pope John Paul II. A tip of the hat goes to a member of the listening audience. Several members of the listening audience picked up on this. This article is from the New York Times of May 22nd of 2003. It's co-authored by Walt Bogdanich and Eric Coley. Bodanich and Koli are those gentlemen's last names. The article is datelined as May 22nd of 2003 and headlined, "Two paths of Bayer drug in the 80s, riskier type went overseas." This looks at an allegation that the Bayer AG's Qatar Biological subsidiary manufactured a clotting medicine from blood plasma that was sold to hemophiliacs and that was known to have been infected or contaminated with the HIV virus that causes AIDS. And it was the deliberate continuation of marketing of this drug, known to be an apparent vector for HIV, that is alleged by many people discussed in this article to have produced AIDS in many people overseas, many hemophiliacs overseas. And this was an apparent significant cause of the spreading of AIDS in third world countries. This article reads in part, "A division of the pharmaceutical company Bayer sold millions of dollars of blood clotting medicine for hemophiliacs, medicine that carried a high risk of transmitting AIDS, to Asia and Latin America in the mid-1980s while selling a new, safer product in the West, according to documents obtained by the New York Times. Again, interjecting here briefly, the fact that these marketing decisions were so dramatically different in the West and in the Third World suggests at least the possibility of a conscious eugenics agenda lurking in the background of this particular marketing decision. Continuing, the Bayer unit, Cutter Biological, introduced its safer medicine in late February of 1984 as evidence mounted that the earlier version was infecting hemophiliacs with HIV. Yet for over a year, the company continued to sell the old medicine overseas, prompting a United States regulator to accuse Cutter of breaking its promise to stop selling the product. By continuing to sell the old version of the life-saving medicine, the records show, Cutter officials were trying to avoid being stuck with large stores of a product that was proving increasingly unmarketable in the United States and Europe. Yet even after it began selling the new product, the company kept making the old medicine for several months more. A telex from Cutter to a distributor suggests one reason behind that decision, too. The company had several fixed-price contracts and believed that the old product would be cheaper to produce. Nearly two decades later, the precise human toll of these marketing decisions is difficult, if not impossible, to document. Many patient records are now unavailable, and because an AIDS test was not developed until later in the epidemic, it is difficult to pinpoint when foreign hemophiliacs were infected with HIV, before Cutter began selling its safer medicine, or afterward. But in Hong Kong and Taiwan alone, more than 100 hemophiliacs got HIV after using Cutter's old medicine, according to records and interviews. Many have since died. Cutter also continued to sell the older product after February of 1984 in Malaysia, Singapore, Indonesia, Japan, and Argentina, records show. The Cutter documents, which were produced in connection with lawsuits filed by American hemophiliacs, went largely unnoticed until the Times began asking about them. Quote, "These are the most incriminating internal pharmaceutical industry documents I have ever seen," unquote, said Dr. Sidney M. Wolfe, who is director of the Public Citizen Health Research Group, has been investigating the industry's practices for three decades. Skipping down. The medicine, called Factor VIII Concentrate, essentially provides the missing ingredient without which hemophiliacs' blood cannot clot. By injecting themselves with it, hemophiliacs can stop bleeding or prevent bleeds from starting. Some use it as many as three times a week. It has helped hemophiliacs lead normal lives. But in the early years of the AIDS epidemic, it became a killer. The medicine was made using pools of plasma from 10,000 or more donors, and since there was still no screening test for the AIDS virus, it carried a high risk of passing along the disease. Even a tiny number of HIV-positive donors could contaminate an entire pool. In the United States, AIDS was passed on to thousands of hemophiliacs, many of whom died in one of the worst drug-related medical disasters in history. While admitting no wrongdoing, Bayer and three other companies that made the concentrate have paid hemophiliacs about $600 million to settle more than 15 years of lawsuits accusing them of making a dangerous product. The Cutter documents, a few of them surfaced in recent years in television and newspaper reports about Cutter's marketing practices, were gleaned from that litigation. But because the documents did not relate directly to the suits, most went uninvestigated. The documents, internal memorandums, minutes of company marketing meetings, and telexes to foreign distributors, reveal and chronicle Cutter's decision to keep exporting the older product after it began making the new one, which was heat-treated to kill HIV. The heat treatment rendered the virus, quote, undetectable, unquote, in the product, according to a government study. There are few available records documenting the actions and decisions of the three other American-based companies that also sold unheated concentrate after offering a heated product. Skipping down. Whether Cutter was behaving ethically became an issue in internal company discussions. Quote, "Can we, in good faith, continue to ship non-heat-treated coagulation products to Japan?" a company task force asked in February of 1985, fearing that some of its plasma donors might be HIV positive. The decision, records show, was yes. Taken together, the documents provide an inside view of Qatar's bottom-line strategizing and efforts to manage the flow of information amid growing public anxiety about the safety of its product. When a Hong Kong distributor in late 1984 expressed an interest in the new product, the records show, Qatar asked the distributor to, quote, use up stocks, unquote, of the old medicine before switching to its, quote, safer, better, unquote, product. Obviously, this indicates a substantive knowledge on the part of Qatar that the older medicine was dangerous. Continuing, several months later, as hemophiliacs in Hong Kong began testing positive for HIV, some local doctors questioned whether Qatar was dumping, quote, AIDS-tainted, unquote, medicine into less developed countries. Still, Qatar assured the distributor that the unheated product posed no severe hazard, unquote, and was the, quote, same fine product we have supplied for years, unquote. Skipping down. By March of 1983, the Center for Disease Control went so far as to warn that blood products, quote, appear responsible for AIDS among hemophilia patients, unquote. The unfolding story had not gone unnoticed at Qatar headquarters. Back in January, Qatar's manager of plasma procurement had acknowledged in a letter, quote, there is strong evidence to suggest that AIDS is passed on to other people through plasma products, unquote. With sales of concentrate beginning to slip, Qatar got more bad news in May of 1983. After learning that a Qatar rival had begun to make heated concentrate, France decided to halt all imports of clotting concentrate until it could figure out what to do. Fearing a loss of customers, Qatar conceived a marketing plan that stopped well short of full disclosure. Quote, we want to give the impression that we are continuously improving our product without telling them we expect soon to also have a heat-treated, unquote, concentrate, an internal memo said. Several weeks later, Qatar tried to minimize the danger hemophiliacs faced when using blood products. Quote, AIDS has become the center of irrational response in many countries, unquote, the company said in a June 1983 letter to distributors in France and 20 other countries, again quoting, this is of particular concern to us because of unsubstantiated speculations that this syndrome may be transmitted by certain blood products, unquote. The French decided to keep using unheated concentrate, and Qatar said it sold them more of the unheated product in August of 1983. Later, two French health officials were sent to prison for continuing to use up old stocks of unheated concentrate in 1985 when a heated product was available. And I would note that, as will be discussed later in the program, IG Farben and its member companies continue to have pivotal influence in France. They retained effective control of the French chemical and pharmaceutical industries, and eventually Ron Poulin, the French state-owned pharmaceutical company, merged with Hoechst, one of the major IG companies, and the executive who presided over that merger was Jean-René Fortou, who was later appointed to be the head of Vivendi, the media firm, when Jean-Marie Messier resigned. More about that inside two of the program. Continuing with this New York Times article of 5/22/2003, Bayer, after skipping down, Bayer, which is based in Germany, said in its statement that an overall plasma shortage in 1985 had kept Qatar from making more heated medicine. But Qatar may actually have contributed to that shortage by using some of its limited plasma supplies to continue making the old product. Bayer's response also emphasized that some countries were slow to approve its new product. For example, Bayer said, procedural requirements, unquote, imposed by Taiwan had delayed its ability to apply for registration, unquote, and had led to other delays as well. But an official at Taiwan's health department, Xu Chen-Wen, said recently that Qatar had not applied for permission to sell the new safer medicine until July of 1985, about a year and a half after it began doing so in the United States. In one case, records show, Qatar officials even discussed trying to delay Japan's approval of heated concentrate so the company shed stocks of the older product. Bayer said Qatar did not act on that idea. Interesting that, again, we certainly appear to be looking at a deliberate and at best cynical decision to continue marketing a deadly drug to hemophiliacs in the third world while arriving at an earlier decision to market a safer drug to people in the first world. This is not something that is to be viewed lightly in light of the Bayer company's history. Although it's done a lot of good, it is, again, one of the principal companies of IG Farben and has a long history of involvement with the politics of murder. It also became a primary element of the Bormann organization in the post-World War II period. We're going to review some information about Martin Bormann and IG Farben head Hermann Schmitz and the role of IG Farben with the Bormann Flight Capital Program that led to the economic component of a post-war underground Reich, referring once again to the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by the brilliant and heroic Paul Manning, published in hardcover by Lyle Stewart in hardcover, again, copyright 1981, copyright by the Manning family of IG Farben, Hermann Schmitz, Martin Bormann, and the Bormann Flight Capital Program. In testimony later given to Nuremberg investigators, Schmitz praised Bormann for the way he had directed the distribution of German assets around the world. His own Farben organization had, of course, contributed to the success of that operation. Every regional representative working for Hermann Schmitz was an exceptional businessman, or he would not have been with IG. All had contributed sound advice in their areas of competence, the regions of the world where they represented Farben, while keeping an eye on the subsidiaries of the parent concern and the 700 hidden corporations they controlled. They had provided assistance and continuing guidance in establishing the 750 new companies created on order of Bormann, who wanted more than hidden assets. Bormann wanted the money and patents and technicians put to work to create even greater assets that would bolster Germany in the post-war years. In their meetings in the Chancellery, both men checked over the figures of sums disbursed, and they were accurate to the pfennig. And this was the IG Farben role in the Bormann Flight Capital Program. There will be detailed annotated descriptions, a detailed annotated description of For the Record program number 411 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website within a week or so of the airing of this program. The Spitfire website is spitfirelist.com. WFMU is archiving the For the Record program's recent programs streaming at wfmu.org/Dave Emery, older programs for download only on Real Audio at a longer URL, linked to both the For the Record section of the Spitfire website and to the wfmu.org/Dave Emery website. Spitfire can be emailed at mail@spitfirelist.com and reached by snail mail at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. This concludes side one of For the Record program number 411, The Bayer Facts, IG Farben and the Politics of Murder, being recorded on May 25th of 2003. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.